Coming up on Golf Today, a Tiger sighting at the Hay, swinging clubs. What does it mean for Tiger in 2024? And is this the man who should captain the U.S. Ryder Cup team in New York or somebody else? And meet the graduates from the Korn Ferry Tour, dreams fulfilled and dashed on Sunday. You won't want to miss the emotion from yesterday's Korn Ferry Tour Championship in Indiana. Not a dry eye in the house. And Luke List made a seagoer from 43 feet in Jackson to win a five-man playoff. The force was with Luke, and you will hear his thoughts coming up on Golf Today.
Golf Today.
Golf Today on this holiday Monday, Damon Hack alongside Eamon Lynch, Golf Week magazine. Yes, he is back. Welcome back. You're back just in time to kind of see this pressure-filled era in the game. Graduates from the Korn Ferry Tour to the PGA Tour, some broken hearts as well. You have this pressure in Korn Ferry Tour, but also in the women's game. Epson Tour players, 10 of them going to the LPGA, not to mention this five-man playoff yesterday in Jackson, Mississippi.
You know, broken hearts, broken umbrellas in Scotland. It actually rained so much in Scotland that they couldn't even play golf on links courses, which famously drain better than anything else in golf. That was one brutally ugly scene in St. Andrews all weekend long. Finally got it finished today.
So you know what that means? It means that Matt Fitzpatrick, we've seen him a lot the last year and a half or so doing just that, kissing a trophy with a smile on his face.
This is the second big trophy in 8 days for Matt Fitzpatrick after that Ryder Cup. Claims the title with a 6-under 66, finishes 19-under par, his ninth win on the DP World Tour. And not only that, but he celebrated in the family home with his mother, Susan. They took the team title in that portion of the event. And afterwards, they talked about the fun they've been having on the golf course.
Yeah, amazing. Obviously, nice way to finish there. Played well on those last few holes coming in, and you know, Mum got us off to a great start on the back nine, and she played great all day again.
So I was watching the coverage. There's been some amazing up and downs. I really enjoyed watching you play. Last year, you described it as one of the best moments of your life, walking down 18. Fast forward a year, you're up there. Obviously, there's golf still to be played. How would you top it this time around?
I don't know if I can top it. It's just been such a great week. I know the weather's been difficult, and it's amazing that they've managed to get us out today. Mm-hmm. But it's just been such a great day today. I've enjoyed the course. We've played at a great pace. Mm-hmm. It's been lovely. So it's been another great week of my life.
Mm. Matt, over to you. I mean, who's the boss? Who leads this? Is it Mum or is it the professional golfer out there?
No. I just got help guide around. You know, one of my close friends, Josh, is on the bag for her, and he's done a great week helping her out as well. And we just had a great week. We really dovetailed well this week, and I think last year we struggled on that front. Every time I made a birdie, Mum would make a birdie, and now she's been brilliant this week.
And so, who had more involvement? Was it the mate Josh, or was it your son Matt?
No, it was Josh. Yeah, he's a good friend of Matt's, and he caddied for me last year as well. He's had the day off today, so he could caddy, and he wanted to finish the job, and he's been great. Green reader, right club, right line, he's done a brilliant job.
That's a pretty unique double, or special double at least, for Matt Fitzpatrick at the Alfred Dunhill Links. Only the second player to win both the individual and team portions of the event after Padraig Harrington, who did so twice, 2002 and in 2006. The individual victory is his second worldwide this year after the playoff victory over Jordan Spieth in Hilton Head earlier this spring. And his mother, Susan, becomes only the second woman ever to win the Alfred Dunhill team portion. And Damon, he's in a pretty purple flush of his career right now. He's winning the tournaments that matter. We all talked about how much the Hilton Head one meant to him earlier in his career. Obviously, a major championship last year. Ryder Cup last week. It's pretty good to be Matt Fitzpatrick these days.
It really is. In professional sports, they're hard. Golf especially hard. But to look at Matt Fitzpatrick's last, say, 16 months or so, it has been really notably special and soulful victories when you look at his CV and the things he's been able to accomplish. 2022, for example, he wins the U.S. Open at the Country Club for his first major, but it's also the same venue where he won the U.S. Amateur in 2013, with his kid brother, by the way, on the back. Alex was also there in the crowd when he won the U.S. Open. You mentioned RBC Heritage. He beats the defending champ, Jordan Spieth, that's where he vacationed with his family, did Matt Fitzpatrick, as a child. Yes, he played for Team Europe. Not only did Europe win, he got his first point. Didn't have a great Ryder Cup in 2016 or 2021. And then there's, of course, winning the team portion, the individual at the Alfred Dunhill Links Championship with his mom. So he's having these great experiences in golf. He's hoisting trophies at the most important events, but also there's this soulful, familial aspect to it that his parents are with him, cheering him on, brother cheering him on, or in this case, inside the ropes with him.
And there's no Ryder Cup hangover either. Not for him, not for Ludvig Åberg on this side of the Atlantic. Nicholas Kolsaert, who is a vice captain in Rome for the European team, he's had some health challenges over the last couple of years. He tied for sixth this week as well. And they're kind of fortunate there was no playoff because there were still three courses in action. Typically, it's three rounds, three different courses, and then the final round on the old course. And there was definitely some complaints today in terms of whether or not the courses were deemed to be playable. The father of Tom McKibben, a young Northern Irish golfer who finished top 15 this week, he tweeted some pictures from Carnoustie earlier today that would have suggested that it's a very charitable definition by the European Tour to have suggested that the conditions were particularly playable out there with players' tee shots landing in hazards like this on the golf course. But you can understand at this time of the year with so much on the line why they want to actually finish a tournament. But certainly a strange week around there, Damon, not just in terms of the weather. I mean, there was a lot of attention paid early last week to Yasser Al-Rumian, the governor of the Saudi Arabian Public Investment Fund, who was playing in the tournament this week. He was actually partnering Peter Uihlein, who was one of four LIV players who actually had a sponsor's exemption. And this tournament is really controlled by Johan Rupert, South African billionaire who's the chairman of the Richemont brands, which includes Cartier, Van Cleef and Arpels. He's not a man who's inclined to have the Saudis exiled. They're a big market for him. It's commerce. Well, he keeps talking about this idea to have peace in golf and golf should bring people together. Well, he also doesn't want it to impede commerce. That's really the motivation here. But Al-Rumian played in one of his pairings with Martin Slumbers, the chief executive of the Royal & Ancient. He also then paired up in another round with Peter Dawson, who's currently chairman of the official World Golf Rankings, which is still reviewing LIV Golf's application for those ranking points. So I'm guessing there was a lot of business talked on both sides there.
It's what they say about golf, one of the great games to play when you want to make deals in terms of business. And you're right also about the weather. The Barry Byrne, which you just showed, which runs across that or in front of that 18th green at Carnoustie, it nearly burst its banks. Fans were not allowed on the golf course today at Kings Barnes or Carnoustie. They allowed fans at the old course, but the conditions were deemed too dangerous to have fans out at Carnoustie or Kings Barnes. Let you know what kind of weather they've been dealing with these past couple of days.
And there were 36 withdrawals this morning before this round got underway. And in some ways, you can kind of understand that the Spanish Open is taking place in Madrid this week. A lot of guys are going to be making their way there. They're focused on that. They're probably not necessarily in the mix in this tournament to begin with, waiting around for 2 days to play the third round of four, or third of three, since they decided not to play a final round. But it's still not a good look when you have three dozen guys decide on the Monday where they're trying to finish the tournament.
Yeah.
The tour, the sponsors, the organisers, they're all making a good faith effort to finish it. But three dozen guys said, you know what, no mas, I'm out of here.
Still nice to see those pictures coming through from Scotland, seeing the old course as well. Speaking of the old course, Tiger Woods has had some success, as you know, at the old course of St. Andrews. We're going to switch gears now to the 15-time major champs. Time for Tiger Tracker on this Monday. I'll tell you what, I watched this video of Tiger. This is the hay at Pebble Beach. And my phone, I was like, is that really Tiger swinging? And it is. I didn't recognize the hat. The color pattern maybe was a little bit unfamiliar to my eye, but that golf swing, Eamon, there he is.
Anytime we can see Tiger Woods swing a golf club, it's welcome news, Damon. We don't get to see it very often, he says. We haven't seen it since he withdrew the Masters earlier this year.
Yeah, this, of course, is Tiger's junior invitational, hosts boys and girls annually out at Pebble Beach. And, of course, the big thought is, you know, does this mean Tiger's going to come back and play? But the question that was kind of burning around social media and elsewhere was about Tiger potentially being the Ryder Cup captain in 2025 for the United States. Davis Love III had this quote, "We've got to call Tiger Woods and ask him. I think if he wants it, obviously it's Tiger's job to have, but it's kind of his call." I would say I hate to put pressure on him, but it's kind of his call. Obviously, with some guys out, I guess he's the next logical choice. Eamon, I feel like it's Tiger's job if he wants it, considering who he is and what he means to the game.
In a way, you could make an argument that Tiger has to take the job because the Ryder Cup team for the United States, I don't think has ever been in worse shape than it is right now.
Ever?
Ever. And I include the debacle after Glenn Eagles in that, which created the task force, because the task force has now put the United States Ryder Cup team in a lousy position. It's created this buddy trip dynamic where Zach Johnson on Tuesday in Rome in a press conference essentially said that the six qualifiers on the team had the most influence in determining who the six captains' picks were. And that's not necessarily the best way to get the best result out of a team, is to keep half the guys comfortable, to make sure they play with their pals or who they're comfortable
with. But
they
were so uncomfortable in 2014. Watson barely spoke to Phil.
Yeah, but that was acrimony. Now you've got apathy.
So they've gone too far the other side. Okay.
I do think that they've taken out all of the acrimony. And they're trying to imitate Europe, but missing the point. And Europe always had a unity of purpose in the Ryder Cup. And that purpose was kicking the butt of the PGA Tour. It was never continent versus continent. It was tour versus tour. The European guys had a chip on their shoulder for years about how they were treated coming over here all the way back to the Seve Ballesteros era. And that was their goal. They were unified around one goal. They were never unified, really, as personalities. There were times they were at each other's throats in the European locker room. And what the American team is trying to do is create this idea that they are all there. There's great comedy between them. They're all buddies. They're all pals. That's not necessarily the best way to get a team. And Tiger Woods strikes me as the kind of guy who'd be looking for a result and would not be afraid of kind of breaking up some of these friendships that seem to dictate who plays with who.
What about the talisman factor of a Seve Ballesteros that the Americans don't seem to have? Maybe Tiger Woods gives them that, not to mention he won a U.S. Open at Bethpage Black in 2002. He's Tiger Woods. You know, I see your Seve Ballesteros. I raise you Tiger Woods, who may not be the guy who can win a 16th major anymore, but he still is the guy that so many of the players who would occupy that team room grew up rooting for and watching.
True, but you would also have to question whether or not the current culture within the Ryder Cup on either side lends itself as much to that. The Europeans really do leverage that kind of Seve Ballesteros image and talismanic effect from 30 years ago. They really lay it on. Sometimes they lay it on a little bit thick, but it is a unifying force. The American team doesn't really have that. And if you have a culture where there is a debate going on internally and externally on the team as to whether or not they are fairly compensated for being there that week, I'm not so sure that just seeing Tiger Woods roll up and give a speech is going to bring that kind of unity to that team. Maybe they're not looking for that unity. I don't necessarily argue that they need unity on the team, but what they don't need is a team that is dictated by people choosing their buddies to go play with them.
I think Tiger Woods is all about winning. And I think that obviously Zach Johnson did the best he could. We spent weeks and months leading up to the Ryder Cup talking about how every dot, I would be dotted, T would be crossed, how meticulous Zach Johnson is and was as a player. Are you saying that he left a few stones turned, as it were?
I think Zach was not the kind of personality who was likely to discomfort his players. And he said on our show here that he thought the players ought to have a strong voice in choosing the team. That's one way of doing it. It is not one that is necessarily designed to prove with great results.
Yeah.
And I don't think it did. In Rome, there were decisions made in terms of partnerships who went out there who were ill-suited to each other and to the format. And Zach ultimately has to own that.
Or it could just be that the Americans keep losing the all-important foursomes. Or it could just be that we're now in a home-and-home situation where the Americans seem to get the job done on home soil and the Europeans get the job done on their home soil.
Well, if you keep sending out your worst ball striker in foursomes, that's a good way to put yourself behind the eight ball.
Touche, Eamon Lynch, touche. Well, folks, sticking with Tiger, time now for some good video just because. And that will follow this. Davis Love with our social question says, Tiger is the next logical choice to be the Ryder Cup captain in 2025. Who do you think it will be? Tiger? Phil? I mean, there was a time when Phil was earmarked as the guy for Bethpage to be the captain in 2025. Who do you like? Larry Nelson, perhaps. And now, speaking of Tiger, some good video just because this was during Tiger's TGR Junior Invitational, the aforementioned 11-year-old.
Here's a kid who's having a better day than you or I will ever have, Damon. Makes an ace
at Pebble Beach with all of his buddies.
That is a remarkable shot. And the celebration as well was just brilliant.
Then he gets a congrats from the greatest of all time. There was a traffic jam at the top of the leaderboard last night in Jackson, Mississippi. At the Sanderson Farms Championship, Luke List broke free with one long, epic putt. We'll have more on that coming up next.
Since winning that first title, List had not posted a top 10 between victories, a span of 46 starts. Best result this season prior to the win was a T11 at the Century. And after the victory Sunday, List spoke about the impact this win will have on his career moving forward.
It obviously opens up a lot of doors, you know, the Century and Maui and the, you know, Augusta and some stuff. So I was just really happy with the way I hung in there mentally throughout the weekend without my A game per se on golf swing. Usually in the past, I would kind of fold up and get a little frustrated, and I was able to just hang in there. My caddy did a fantastic job on keeping me present, and just very fortunate to come out on top.
We were talking to Mackenzie Hughes earlier this week about the conversation starter in his house that trophy is. I guess, how excited are you about it, and how unique is that to add your collection?
Yeah, I'm very excited because my daughter's been kind of on me. It's time to win another trophy, and she really enjoyed the surfboard at Torrey Pines. And I told her earlier in the week there was a rooster or chicken or whatever you want to call it. So she's pretty excited. And so I think we'll have to get her a little mini version of it for that. But it's nice to have your kids present and old enough to kind of appreciate it and share with them. And I'm very fortunate.
Well, when you see a leaderboard this crowded, you can be sure that a lot of guys left Jackson, Mississippi, ruining a missed opportunity. One of those guys, right there, tied for second, Ben Griffin, who talked about how emotional it is to come close to breaking through, but coming up short.
It's a bummer. It's, you know, I learned a lot from Bermuda, and I thought I was going to still be able to get it done today, and it just sucks. That's all it is. But, you know, I get to play golf for a living, so. Yeah.
Just hitting that one shot at the wrong time, that sounds like the main thing that you learned today, but was there anything else during the round that, you know, you had some sort of feelings inside that you hadn't experienced before?
Yeah, not necessarily. You know, obviously there's nerves. It's Sunday. You know, your body always feels different on Sundays. But I felt like from a golf, you know, physical standpoint, I was still in a good place. I just didn't hit very good shots pretty much all day. It was just I got out of position a lot, and I saved bogeys when I needed to. You know, maybe got a tough break here or there with plugged lie, whatever it may be. But, it's hard closing out on the PGA Tour. I should have got it done, and it's a bummer, but I'll be back.
So much to be proud of when you look back at this week. Can you share maybe one thing that you are proud of about what you did accomplish and what you went through this week?
Yeah, I mean, my name was on top of the leaderboard for a good chunk of it, so there's a lot of positives, but, you know, it's a 72-hole tournament every single week, and, you know, it really doesn't matter what happens until the final scores get posted on Sunday. But, yeah, a lot of positives. You know, my game's in a good spot. You know, it's rewarding to know that, you know, this offseason wasn't as bad as I thought it might have been from getting ready for a tournament per se. I felt like last week I grinded pretty hard. But I've got the game, I've got the talent. I just gotta just be really, really strong down the stretch moving forward.
And just one more for me. You had some of your support system here when you came off the green. What does it mean to you to have them here and just be able to embrace them and see them after this?
Yeah, it's just emotional. You know, they wanted me to win more than I probably wanted to, but it's just a bummer. But I'm so happy to have everyone, all of them in my life. They have my back, and I know I'm going to be back.
Ben Griffin, one of several players taking positives from this week. Time now for winners who didn't win. Damon, who else do you look at in this field at the Sanderson Farms who walks away without the trophy, but not necessarily empty-handed?
Ludwig Åberg. What a couple of weeks he's had. You think about his Ryder Cup, he goes 2-2, part of that 9-7 trouncing with Victor Hovland of Scottie Scheffler and Brooks Koepka. Then he goes to Jackson, finishes tied for second, shoots that final round 68. And oh, by the way, did you see on social media, also picked up a few new fans.
Cute. Thank you so much for being here.
We signed this too, Jimmy.
Thank you so much.
Love you.
Oh my God, that's so fun.
I love it.
Oh, he's incredible. And he...
One, first of all, youngest unprofessional player on the Ryder Cup, came here to Jackson, Mississippi. Mississippi, of any place that he could go, he fulfilled his commitment. Love him. Great guy. And he's so cute, let's be honest.
And it's so nice. He actually was there. That was so sweet.
And he was playing with the kids.
We love that.
Sorry, we're dorks. I'm a dork.
You get that kind of reception everywhere you go as well.
Oh, yeah, from time to time. And the ladies love it. A man who keeps his commitment. That's a young Ludwig Aubert. And the man can play some golf as well. I tell you what, it's rare in the game when you have a lot of people say, well, this guy's going to be the next. This kid is coming. But yeah. This has been someone who's been confirmed, whether it's college when he was first in PGA Tour, university, and now, you know, what a hot start to his professional career as well.
It still astonishes me that he's played on a winning Ryder Cup team and has never played in a major championship at this point. But there's a kid whose career just seems to be on a meteoric rise. And it's always interesting to see how, as time goes by, how they actually adapt to the various potholes that you're going to hit in this kind of sport. But it's certainly good to be Ludwig these days.
No doubt. Who you got?
I look at, Henrik Norlander this week. And he's had a lousy season. 28 starts out there, not a single top 10 finish. His best finish had been tied for 15th in Puerto Rico. That was all the way back in March. And he really exemplifies what this fall FedEx Cup series is about now, because it's the Hunger Games out there. It's either eat or go home. And Norlander was awfully close to going home. He was 142nd on the points list coming into this week. The top 125 will keep status, fully exempt status, on the PGA Tour in the calendar year of 2024. He needed the result that he got, and that tied second has now moved him up to 120th. He's got a lot of work to do in the last few events that we have out there up until the RSM Classic and Sea Island finishes the stretch. But he's in a lot better position than he was in. And to me, this is kind of what this time of the year is designed to be. And we're going to see that with the Q School later this year as well, is that people playing for a livelihood, it's not much fun for them.
Yeah.
It can be fun for the rest of us, though.
It's a more defined fall than this sort of, is the season started? Is it new? You got players that are upset that players are playing in the fall. Like, mainly the big ticket players, for the most part, saying, no, I got to catch up in January. It just feels like this FedEx Cup fall, this incarnation of this time of the year, seems more well-defined than previous incarnations.
Yeah, it always felt like kind of an amorphous blob. And you can go back a decade when there were tournaments held after the Tour Championship. Even when the Tour Championship ended in October, you would have a couple of events just sort of plopped on the schedule. After that, didn't have an identity. It's harder to carve out an identity for a tournament at this point in the year. So kudos to the Shriners for actually inviting Lexi Thompson this week. That's going to bring more attention to a tournament that otherwise might not get as many eyeballs on it. But it's still, when you get down to the nitty-gritty of keeping your card on the PGA Tour and having a job for next year, this matters to a lot of people out there.
Many motivations to play well. How about some more motivation on this Monday? We turn our attention to Brett White, who turned pro in 2016. He won the 2019 Nevada Open and the 2020 Michigan Open, and then he suffered from viral encephalitis in 2017 and spent 3 weeks in the hospital. The virus made him unable to speak, caused memory loss, and he was paralyzed below the waist. After the swelling in his brain went down, he was confined to a wheelchair and underwent 10 weeks of physical therapy to learn to walk again. He did not play golf for a year following his hospital stay. And back in February, we spoke with Brett ahead of his PGA Tour debut.
2 weeks before I ended up in the hospital, I took second. I lost in a playoff in the New Hampshire State Open. I was playing good golf, and then, you know, boom, like 10 days later, I'm laid up in the hospital not knowing what's going to happen. And, there was questions whether or not I was going to play golf. There was questions whether or not I was going to be able to walk on my own, live on my own for the early days. But, you know, once they got the brain swelling under control, you know, it was all about now let's see how much you can get back to normal. And I've been blessed. You know, I was lucky. I had great medical care, Spectrum Health and Mary Freebed in Grand Rapids, and a lot of luck, I'm sure, the big man.
The big man definitely was shining down on you, but you had to put in the work yourself as well. How did you even come to a process from walking to talking to the different basic things you had to do, let alone trying to play golf again?
You know, it was kind of simple. It was just like trying to get better every day. I mean, it was like that. I would do hours of physical therapy. I would do speech therapy because my speech was affected. I did occupational therapy, just trying to like get my motor skills down and writing again. But it was just about, okay, once I break one barrier, what's the next one? And golf motivated me through that. I knew I needed to be able to play golf just for my sanity. I didn't know what level I was going to be at, but it's just a part of my identity. Golf helped because I was outside. I was walking. I was walking on uneven surfaces. And, I just tried to get better every day.
Fast forward to this past week, White Monday qualified for last week's Sanderson Farms Championship and made the most of his start, finishing the week in a tie for 13th. He spoke with the media on Friday after making the cut.
What do you hope, standing here, having made a PGA Tour cut and been through everything you've been through? What message does that send to people that maybe are also going through various challenges?
Man, that's a tough one. When I was going through it, I just kept on putting one foot forward. What message does it send, all that kind of stuff. I think people have to kind of look within themselves and find their meaning and all that stuff. But I know why I'm playing golf. I know who and what I'm doing it for. Other than that, people who are going through something, just try and put one foot forward and get better every day.
One of the great stories of 2023, his perseverance. When we spoke to him in February, can you imagine that we'd be talking about him today in October?
And a top 20 finish on the PGA Tour. And we spend a lot of time on this show, and everyone we know who plays golf spends a lot of time talking about double bogeys, triple bogeys, as though it's a be-all and end-all. There's a guy who knows what the dark side of life is like, to the point of having his life endangered in a medical situation. Golf, for him, it became a goal. Now, he's actually reaping the rewards of it. It's great to see that this game delivers stories like that with a remarkable consistency. And where he was just a few years ago to where he is now, that's really drawing in sharp relief what this game can do for you.
Vile encephalitis, had to learn to speak again, learn to walk again, let alone trying to figure out how to play golf. I mean, it is a wonderful, beautiful story. A lot of people rooting for Brett White.
We certainly hope to see a lot more of him coming up this year. Well, one of the funniest guys on social media is about to bring the laughs to the senior circuit. Greg Chalmers turns 50 on Wednesday, but isn't allowed to play the first event for which he's eligible, which starts on Friday. He'll explain that one coming up next. Continuing on Golf Today, let's take you back to 2016. 42-year-old Aussie named Greg Chalmers won for the first time on the PGA Tour at the Barracuda Championship. He'd only played 6 tour events that season, missed the cut in his last 5, but he put it all together at Montreux Golf and Country Club. And he's a man who has won on multiple tours around the world, not least 2 Australian Opens, an extraordinarily prestigious title for a man from Greg's corner of the globe. He also won the 1993 Australian Amateur at Royal Hobart Golf Club. And Greg Chalmers joins us now, also with his social media alter ego, Greggy. And Greg, you're in the waning hours of your 40s now. You turned 50 on Wednesday, but you're not eligible to play the Champions Tour event, which starts 2 days after your birthday. Explain to us why.
Yeah, it's a bit of a weird one. I tried to enter the qualifier, and typically, if I got an invite, I'd be fine. I'd be allowed to play because you turn 50 before everyone starts on Friday. But you have to be 50 before the qualifier. And the only reason I thought that was strange is because you can be 49 and go to Q School. And then once you turn 50, and you'd be eligible to play beyond after turning 50. So I was a little mad when I wrote that, a little frustrated, but it is what it is. It's our own regulations. It's, no one to blame but ourselves. We write them. And clearly that's what they want. It's happened before. I found that out. So it is what it is, and I'll wait till next time.
Greg, some guys turn 50. They want to go chase down Bernhard Langer, be the next Hale Irwin. Some guys just want to make a few bucks, or some guys want to compete. What's the biggest pull that takes you to the 50 and over set?
I think the attractive things are the competition. I really want to compete against some people that my age bracket. And I think the big piece of it too, aside from the finances, which would be lovely, you've seen what some players have done, and it'd be always nice to make money. Who doesn't love money? I think the other piece is when I look at the leader, I know everybody. Right? When I look at who's playing, and I've played against them all my life, I like that feel, and just to be able to walk around and talk to people and say hello at this age and this point in my life, I'm a little more social than I was when I was a younger. So I think that piece of it just seems like a little more friendly and really enjoyable experience. And I'd like to be able to do that.
Would your social media alter ego say here, Greg, that this is the last chance for Langer and Stricker to get a trophy before you start dominating out there?
Yeah, I do spend a lot of time pumping myself up. And if you follow me at all, about 2 years ago, I decided on Twitter that I'm a little more honest than I would have been many years ago. I kind of don't care a little bit. And so I tend to just write things that make me chuckle or make me sound good or hopefully inform people occasionally. And so I enjoy it. I have a bit of fun with it. I only tweet when I'm bored. And if you don't like it, that's fine. You just keep scrolling or stop and comment. That happens too. But it's a bit of fun. I just enjoy it.
Well, you're also very honest. You had this simulator, and I think you knocked a hole in it. You had some trouble, you know, with your roof or something. Like, what's going on with this simulator?
Yeah. Oh, well, no, I broke a brand new driver on my roof garage light, so I cracked that. Then this was the simulator. I hit one straight through that because I'm so, so powerful, guys. 170, that's 172 miles an hour ball speed right there through the wall. It doesn't matter that like 3 million people hit between that in that simulator prior to me at all. So yeah, it's just something. If I see an opportunity and I think I can, take the mickey out of myself or someone else. I really like trolling PGA Tour and their accounts and posting a few things here and there. But it's just something to have a chuckle here or there, hopefully.
Speaking of the PGA Tour, Greg, was there a point, and when was that point, where you realised that this power game had passed you by and that the ability to actually compete and contend on a week-to-week basis out there was just going to become more and more difficult for you?
You know, I wish I could put a time frame on it. I probably was behind the times when it came to technology and embracing, whether it be getting bigger, faster, stronger. I was in that old school kind of frame of mind where you'd get tight or you'd get sore or you couldn't work, you know. So really not really educating myself, I think, through my later 30s. And then about 5 years ago, I started really getting into it and really working out with a view just to not slow down any further, because you will slow down as you get beyond my age bracket now, 45, 50. So I started getting after it, and that's what I've been doing. I'm actually hitting it the furthest I've ever hit it in my life right now. So it's been pretty exciting. It's been a bit of work, but my trainer and I are working really hard and looking forward to the future. We've got some exciting things coming out.
Speaking of having a view, you had a prediction long before the Ryder Cup was completed that it might go Europe's way, and it had to do with a photo. Steve Stricker, you can barely see the vice captain, you know, the captain, Zach, he's holding the trophy, but his face is partially obscured as well. Was this kind of the tell that it'll be a rough week in Roma?
Yeah, that's my opinion. These guys can't even take selfies. They're no chance. I'll probably bump into them one day, but hopefully they'll improve their selfie skills and then they'll be off and away. You've got to kick off correctly if you're a chance to beat, some of the other guys and the best players in the world.
Well, you're going into some kind of fertile terrain now in the senior tour. You can start trolling a whole new group of peers out there as well, Greg. But what are your actual playing expectations when you get out there?
Well, I've got a tough road in front of me, to be honest. I'm in the final stage of Q School in December, 5-8. There's only 78 guys for, I think, 4 spots. I'm not sure how many spots. It's usually 4 or 5. So that's quite a tough ask. You need to be good and a little lucky that week. So outside of that, I would chase Monday qualifiers or any qualifying opportunities and take any opportunities I could get to see if I could go and compete and play. I really enjoy my golf right now. I really enjoy even the small opportunities I get on the PGA Tour, even if I don't play well, I still really enjoy competing. And even though I know realistically it's a tough order for me in my age bracket and everyone's so young and good, but I do love getting after it and trying to get the best out of myself in my age bracket.
Greg, there's some pro golfers with some great nicknames throughout the history. Back when I was covering the PGA Tour as a writer, I believe your nickname was Snake. Did you have like a pet boa constrictor as a kid or something?
No. That's a play on my last name. In Australia, my last name, you wouldn't pronounce the L. The L would be more of an R. So it would be Charmer. So a Snake Charmer. And so that actually Craig Parry's brother gave me that name. And it's a great nickname. The only thing missing is performance. So if I had the performance, I'd be the Golden Bear of the Shark or anything like that. We just haven't had that yet. We got time.
Well, you got a whole new life ahead with the 15-over set PGA Tour champions. Snake, Greg, best of luck, and thanks for the time.
Thanks, guys. Have a great day.
All right, folks, still to come. You thought we saw pressure at Sanderson Farms? It was ratcheted up even more on the Korn Ferry Tour Championship. Find out who garnered one of 30 PGA Tour cards on the line.
We're back on Golf Today. The 2023 Korn Ferry Tour season concluded Sunday afternoon. The Korn Ferry Tour Championship presented by United Leasing and Finance. Paul Barjon won for the second time this season, moving him from number 45 to number 8 in the Korn Ferry Tour points list and locking up his spot in the top 30 and a return to the PGA Tour.
Eamon, 30 PGA Tour cards were awarded in a ceremony on 18 Green at Victoria National Golf Club. Meet some of the graduates there. It's always an emotional day. A little champagne is toasted as these players look ahead to the great future on the PGA Tour. Top 30 earning those cards for 2024, which for the latest group of Korn Ferry Tour graduates begins in January at the Sony Open in Hawaii. Here's some notes on the grads. 30 players, 18 will be rookies, which means many of them are going back. 7 countries and territories are represented across the class. 7 PGA Tour University alums earning their first PGA Tour card. 1 pair of fraternal twins, that's Parker and Pearson Cootie, earning their first cards. Is there a grad that you want to focus on specifically?
Well, there's a lot of quality in that list that we just saw. But the one that stands out to me, and he's evidence that Ludwig Ober is not the only stud coming out of continental Europe these days, and that's Adrien Dumont de Chassard, who graduated. He was actually number 3 in the PGA Tour University rankings. That's how he made his way onto the Korn Ferry Tour, which is proof that that program is also delivering. Mm. But it was only in June that he made his way onto the Korn Ferry Tour, and he's locked up his card now in October. And earlier this summer, we had Mike Small, the coach from the University of Illinois, on the show, and I asked him just what the ceiling was for Adrien Dumont de Chassard, and this is what he said.
When Adrien showed up on campus 5 years ago, you knew he had pro qualities. He had the ability to score the golf ball. He had touch and feel around the greens, but he wasn't quite worldly yet or didn't really know how he was going to react under certain situations. But you knew he had the talent and the capabilities to adapt to whatever level he goes to. And obviously he leaves the first team All-American, one of the best players, if not the best player, to have a college career at Illinois. We've had 2 individual national champions, but Adrien's ascent and consistency for 5 years is pretty remarkable. And to see him go to the next level and just take professional golf and understand that it is just golf, and that he was trained and he practiced and he visualized and he believed while at Illinois what it took to get there. And he realizes this next level is just an extension of playing at Illinois and playing college golf. And I don't think he's made it bigger than it is. And his talents are coming out very consistently and very obviously positively early. But he's a player that his game will grow, and he will adapt to whatever level of competition he is at. And obviously next year he'll be on the PGA Tour, and I expect him to have bright, shiny moments there too. Now, we all know that professional golf is full of peaks and valleys, and very rarely does everybody play good all the time, and well, never really. And now he's hasn't really experienced playing poorly as a pro yet, but when that time comes and it falls into a little bit of a funk, his maturity, his habits, his ability to believe in himself is going to bring him through those quicker than probably somebody else, I believe. So I believe his valleys will be quicker and his peaks will be just as high as anybody. And I think he'll have a long, prosperous career on tour.
Well, it's been all peaks so far. Damon, the young Belgian, won his very first start on the Korn Ferry Tour back in June at the BMW Charity Pro-Am. He was top 10 in his first 6 starts on the Korn Ferry Tour. He really is a remarkable talent. And it's going to be fun to see him play the Ryder Cup in Bethpage 2 years.
Maybe not for the American golf fan. I tell you, Mike Small has produced some wonderful professional golfers.
And he thinks this could be the best of all.
No doubt. Oh, so many great stories yesterday in Indiana. I'm focusing on Rafael Campos. He's from Puerto Rico, a journeyman. You might have seen him from time to time. He kind of is a host every year of the Puerto Rico Open. He's bounced back and forth from the PGA Tour to the Korn Ferry Tour. Yesterday, he was waiting in the clubhouse to find out if he'd have enough, you know, points to gain that PGA Tour card. He found out he was number 30 on the list, and here was his reaction.
They've been horrible, horrible, honestly. God, I just want to thank. I just want to thank my sponsors, my family, my wife, my friends that came out this week, my team. God, it's tough. I'm tired. It's been a long year. A lot of work, to tell you the truth. Just really happy I was able to finish on the position I'm in right now. Oh, what a tough year. What a tough year. Yeah, the last hour and a half has been a lot of emotions coming in and out. A lot of thoughts, positive, negative. Just kept on thinking of the amount of work I put in for this year. God, I put too much work. I'm really happy it paid off. Obviously, it's hard to be, you know, 30th. I feel bad for 31st. I was there 20 minutes ago. It's been a tough year. I'm just happy I have another chance to go back to the PGA Tour and try to do as well as possible. Hopefully keep doing what I'm doing. A lot of things I need to improve. Under pressure, I've been actually struggling quite a bit. And I'm just grateful my family came here. My team came here. my wife, I know they were struggling as much as I was. It's just nice to be tour bound again.
Took another player's penalty to get him to number 30. He was outside that number. This is someone in Rafael who's 35 years of age from Puerto Rico. When Hurricane Maria hit Puerto Rico in 2017, he was on the front lines in the relief effort. He's been doing this for a long time, and you could see the emotion of what number 30 means to him.
Yeah, that's Adrian Dumont-Chassart with 12 years more scar tissue and what it means to try to make a living in this game and how difficult and perilous that pathway is, even for the best players in the world. And you got to give him credit in that moment there of sparing a thought for the guy who finished in 31st place on that list. It's very easy on a day like yesterday where we see so much emotion out there to focus on the guys who are waving their hats and cheering because they've had a good day. But a lot of people left that tournament yesterday with dreams crushed, if only temporarily. Yeah. They're still on the Korn Ferry Tour. They'll find their way perhaps through Q School, another pathway. Their journey continues. And spare thought for Alex Baldwin, president of the Korn Ferry Tour. She's now given her 30 best to Jay Monahan. Say, there you go. See what you can do with him. And let's start all over again.
Yeah, Rafael showing a lot of empathy because he's been on the outside looking in before.
That's for sure. Well, one of the biggest storylines on the PGA Tour this week happens to be one of the biggest stars on the LPGA Tour. Lexi Thompson is headlining Las Vegas. Beth Ann Nichols will be here to break it all down right after this break.
Golf Central Update, brought to you by Callaway Golf.
Back on Golf Today, we turn our focus to the LPGA Tour. Hyoju Kim returned to the winner's circle this weekend, dominating the field at the Ascendant LPGA, benefiting Volunteers of America. Wire-to-wire finish, one of just two players to shoot all four rounds under par at Old American Golf Club, secured a four-shot win with a 69 on Sunday, minus 13 overall. And the victory marks, it's 2023, it's our third season in a row with a win. I want to say it was 21, 22, in 23. There you see it, a four-shot victory. And also on the leaderboard, you see Lexi Thompson. She finished solo fifth.
And there's a little more Lexi Thompson news, Damon. The 11-time LPGA Tour winner will tee it up this week at the Shriners Children's Open on a sponsor invite over on the PGA Tour. And she joins a distinguished list of top women players over the years who've teed it up on the PGA Tour. Obviously, Michelle Wee West has done that eight times more than anyone else.
Abe Diedrichsen, Zaharia still has the best finish of any woman who's teed it up in a PGA Tour event. That was 33rd at the 1945 Phoenix Open. But Brittany Lincecum, Susie Whaley, Annika Sorenstam, and the great Shirley Sport also on that list. And we're joined now by my Golf Week colleague, senior writer Bethan Nichols. Bethan, the LPGA Tour does have an event this week, but it's middle of the night in Shanghai. Probably not going to get a lot of attention. This has to be a good way for the women's game to actually get some attention this week. Is it good for women's golf? Is it good for Lexi?
Well, you know, I don't think it's nearly the same amount of pressure as we've seen for someone like Annika Sorenstam, for example, a Colonial or a Michelle Wee West. You know, I think for Lexi Thompson, should she make the cut this week, it would change the way people would talk about her for the rest of her life, for sure. Should she miss the cut this week, I don't really think much changes. You know, I think there will be a lot of eyeballs on this event, which is always a great thing for the LPGA. You know, I admit when I first heard this news, it was really surprising given that Lexi was in the midst of her worst season on the LPGA. However, she's found something undeniably. And, you know, Angela Stanford told me last week that Stacey Lewis told Lexi in Cincinnati before the Solheim Cup that she was not going to play in foursomes and she was prepared to sit her. And Lexi found something in that time off between the Cincinnati stop in Spain. And she has carried it on past the Solheim Cup, gaining the confidence of a lot of folks. So, you know, I think that there are going to be hopefully a lot of parents who take their kids out to watch Lexi Thompson. And Lexi Thompson is extremely good at interacting with fans, one of the best on the LPGA. And I think a lot of youngsters will have a week that they'll never forget.
And she's a bona fide star, 11-time winner, a major champ, a fixture on the Solheim Cup team. She has not won in 4 years, hasn't had a great season, as you mentioned. How do you think she will handle the scrutiny, the spotlight, if she doesn't play well this week?
Well, you know, I think it might, I'm hopeful that it's good both inside and outside the ropes. I know she's going to be great with fans. I know she's going to be great, you know, with everyone she interacts with, you know, in terms of galleries. I hope that she gives us some honest assessment to in the press afterwards, and that, you know, it would be great if she opened a vein and really talked about the experience and in a brutally honest way, because I think that would be a really great insight into Lexi Thompson. But you know, I think when you look at her background playing, you know, growing up with two brothers who went on to earn their own PGA Tour cards, you know, it's a unique environment that she's grown up in playing alongside brothers that she's been chasing who are, you know, world-class players. So, you know, I think that Lexi will feel more comfortable on the PGA Tour than most women. I also think that, you know, her game often is inhibited. She's held back on the LPGA. So, you know, she has an opportunity to really let it loose, show off her distance. And, you know, if she's hovering around the cut line, she will feel a lot of pressure, but it won't be anything like a major championship, in my opinion, because we expect her to win those, right?
And Bethan, you also talked, I believe, with Susie Whaley, who knows a little something about playing in the PGA Tour event. She did so at the Travelers. And Susie would probably admit that she didn't bring as much firepower to the tee as Lexi Thompson is going to bring. But that's obviously only part of what goes on that week at a tour event. Did Susie give you any insight as to the kind of people who made it work for her that week and what Lexi will need as a kind of support system around her?
Well, I think one of the most interesting differences between Susie and Lexi is that Susie had months and months and months leading up to this moment. And she said, you know, Lexi's going to get a lot of criticism on social media. You know, maybe she'll hear some things from fellow players out there. But for Susie, all that came in the mail. You know, she could go to her mailbox and take out a letter and wouldn't know if it'd be someone, you know, loving on her or hating on her when she opened it up. So, you know, she had to deal with it for a long time. And Peter Jacobson was a huge help to her in the months leading up to it. And then the week of as well, she said Paul Azinger came to her right off the bat, one of the first people she saw that week, and said, Susie, anything you need, I'm here for you. David Faraday walked around with her during a practice round offering advice. And Peter Jacobson, of course, played with her during a practice round and actually taught her a chip shot that she said really made a tremendous difference that she used throughout throughout her time that week and continues to use it to this day. So Peter Jacobson, of course, went on to win that week, which she said was just a beautiful moment for her, given what he meant to her to have a successful week.
Love pros helping other pros. Now, Hyoju Kim won the tournament in Texas. Lindsey Weaver Wright, T16 finish, great hole out. She's one of the many moms on tour. I'm impressed. I bow down. How do these mighty strong women make it work as a mom on tour?
Man, I'm impressed too. I got to tell you, I don't know how they get their sleep, but here's Lindsey right here. Lindsey Weaver Wright, holing out for 137 yards on her final shot before she sails into maternity leave, which is so beautiful, on her home course in Texas. She's a member there at the Old American Golf Club, lives nearby. And you know, she says she's going to come back in March. That's the plan right now. She's due to have a baby boy in December. There have been a number of players who've given birth this year, Caroline Masson, MB Park, Amy Olsen. It'll be interesting to see Sophia Popov. It'll be interesting to see how many of them do come back to the LPGA and when they do. But I think we're seeing a lot more players come back that quite frankly, I thought would. I thought some players that would sail off into the sunset and leave competition behind. But with the Smucker's Daycare available to them and looking at players like Lexi on the brain, Stacey Lewis continuing to have so much success and to win as a mom on tour, I think has been really inspiring for a lot of players.
It could be more competitive to get a spot in daycare next year than it could be to keep a tour card at this rate, Bethan. But there were a lot of great stories this weekend. Catherine Muzzi, who was a Monday qualifier, finished in the top 10. Another great narrative out there. What can you tell us about her?
You know, this is a really interesting storyline from the standpoint, not just what happened with Catherine, who Monday qualified for her first LPGA start, finished in the top 10, which was incredible, tie for seventh. But she just graduated from South Carolina this past year and received a scholarship, if you will, an endorsement from the Annika Foundation, where she has the ability to get $10,000 for the next 3 years to help with her stipend for travel and entry fees, just like the tournament she just played in. She has free housing in Aiken, South Carolina, and she can play at the Old Barnwell for 3 years as well, which is just a tremendous stepping stone for these young professional athletes. And Annika, it's actually her birthday today. Happy birthday, Annika. Setting this up for four players who play in the Carolinas area or Georgia, played either our residence or played college golf there. And it's just a something that Sweden, actually, Annika is very well aware of what Sweden does for a lot of its young amateurs who are making the transition to the professional ranks. So to offer something like this is tremendous and you know, could be life-changing for someone like Catherine.
Happy birthday, Annika, friend of the program. You know, Bethan, we detailed the pressure of Korn Ferry Tour. Rafael Campos finished 30th on the list on his way to the PGA Tour. Any similar stories that you found at Daytona on the Epson Tour?
You know, there were two players who came in to the Epson Tour Championship who were outside of the top 10 and played their way in. Austin Kim, who was 15th going into the week, she won the tournament and to vault up to third on the money list and earn her card. And then Kristen Gilman, a two-time U.S. Women's Amateur Champion, who had an LPGA card back in 2019 and played well enough to qualify for the CME Group Tour Championship. She lost her status and was back out on the Epson Tour all year this year. And I talked to Kristen this morning and she said, standing on the 16th green, she looked up at the scoreboard and realized that she really needed to make something happen here in the last couple of holes at LPGA International. So what does she do? She goes to the par 3 17th. She hits a 6-iron to 8 feet, knocks that in for birdie, goes to the par 5 18th. It's a 4-hybrid in on her second shot to 5 feet, makes eagle. And that birdie eagle finish gives her the final LPGA card of the season from the Epson Tour. And so she'll be back out on the LPGA next year. And all Kristen, you know, mini tour life is playing in a pro-am today, standing on the 13th tee, hitting driver after driver after driver for every group that comes through. So back to the grind, but with a big smile on her face and a lot of time off now because she gets to avoid LPGA Q Series. So It'd be great to see her back out there.
No doubt. In my next round of golf, I'm going to stand on the 16th tee and say, I really need to do something here. And maybe I'll finish birdie eagle.
Yeah, I think a couple of beers is what you need to do.
Yeah, it might be. Great stuff, Beth Ann. We'll speak to you soon.
Thanks. Sounds great.
All right. As Beth Ann mentioned, huge week for the Epson Tour. Let's get an update on the Epson Tour. That's the road to the LPGA. Austin Kim, as mentioned, won the 2023 Epson Tour Championship on Sunday in Daytona Beach, Florida. Not only did the Vanderbilt University grad claim her first pro victory, but she also earned a spot on the LPGA Tour for 2024. And in the season-ending event on the Epson Tour, the top 10 finishers, there they are in the race for the card. Money list have been awarded LPGA cards for 2024. I've emceed this ceremony in the past. It's always an emotional day. Sometimes they take a plunge into the pool, always Prosecco or champagne for the celebration. These are the 10 Epson Tour graduates on their way to the LPGA Tour.
Welcome back to Golf Today. You're looking at one of the greatest golf courses in the world, Royal Melbourne. And in just a few weeks, it will host the Asia Pacific Amateur Championship. Day begins October 26th, and the winner of this event will receive several notable rewards. That includes an invitation to compete in the 2024 Masters Tournament, an exemption into the 152nd Open Championship at Royal Troon Golf Club next July, and an exemption into the 129th Amateur Championship at Ballyliffin Golf Club in Northwest Ireland.
Amazing, amazing opportunity for these young players, including this one, Jimmy Zhang, senior on the Duke men's golf team. In his junior season, Jimmy was named the All-ACC Academic Team for the second straight year and moved to eighth in Duke history for career scoring average. Here's a little bit more about Jimmy, currently a senior, as mentioned, named that All-ACC Academic Team as a sophomore and junior. The Dukies, they're not just great athletes, they hit the books as well. Also made a hole-in-one his college debut at the 2021 Camp Creek Seminole Invitational. And great to have Jimmy with us on this Monday. Congrats on making it back to the Asia Pacific Amateur Championship. You played a couple of years ago. How are you different now?
I think after about 2 years, I'm definitely a more mature player now. I've learned a lot in my time here at Duke, and it's just a great experience to be able to play the Asia Pacific again, especially at a course which I've played before. Even though it was, I think, the West course I played a few years ago, I'm really excited to play the composite course this year, though.
What kind of stature does the Asia Pacific Amateur Championship have now in that part of the world, Jimmy? Because it hasn't been around for a very long time, but it has produced some pretty notable winners.
I think the Asia Pacific has been quite a big event. I know New Zealand, we hosted it when I was a junior golfer, and I was really gutted to miss that lineup. So I think it's been a pretty big tournament for like New Zealanders and all players from Asia Pacific.
Jimmy, you know, most people you ask their favorite golf course or a dream list, they'd want to play Augusta National, they would say Seminole, maybe a Pebble Beach. But the golfers in the know often bring up Royal Melbourne. What should we know about Royal Melbourne? It's on my bucket list, but I don't know what makes it great. What makes it great in your mind?
To me, it's definitely one of like the best Sunbelt courses Melbourne has to offer. It's a great privilege to just be able to play that course alone. And I think for the viewers back home, I mean, it's going to look very similar to what the President's Cup looked like a few years ago. So it's going to be in great condition. The greens are going to be rolling fast. It's just going to look amazing.
Jimmy, we've just gone through the list of rewards that the winner of the Asia Pacific Amateur Championship will get, including the Masters, the Open Championship next year. Do you allow yourself to dream of what could be?
Oh, absolutely. It would be the greatest honor to be able to play in such big events. But, I mean, when it comes to the tournament, I'm just going to take it step by step and just try my best to, like, do what I can do to play my best golf, you know? So I'm not going to be, like, obsessing over, I can get a Masters exemption if I win or get to play the British Open later next year.
2018, you played in the Youth Olympics for New Zealand, got a great shout-out from Lydia Ko. How close-knit is the New Zealand golf community?
I think it's as close as it should be, or as it is, really. it was really cool seeing Lydia cheer me and Juliana on a few years ago. And I think, I mean, just being able to see like Danny Hillier and Ryan Fox be winning it out on the DP World Tour and be able to cheer them on, it's a great community to be a part of.
Jimmy, it's great to meet with you. Best of luck at Royal Melbourne. We'll speak to you down the road.
Thank you.